Track 4, the cold weather analogy. On the previous track, we talked about three control tactics. Remember what they were? Can't you take a joke, betrayal of a confidence, and breaking an agreement. Now we will look at how these three tactics are linked with your client's depression. Many clients experiencing controlling abusive behavior suffer from symptoms of depression. As you know, the DSM symptoms include problems with eating and sleeping, guilt feelings, loss of energy, trouble concentrating, and thoughts about death. I'll talk about Shannon in a minute, who did not realize that she was being abused. She often thought that her relationship with Aaron had normal fights involved. She refused to believe that her great catch, Aaron, whom she loved and trusted, was slowly chipping away at her self-esteem. Think of the phrase I just said, chipping away at her self-esteem. How does that phrase apply to one of your current clients? Ask yourself, to what extent are the following three ways in which your client is not aware of the controlling behavior chip away at their self-esteem? Number one, he or she doesn't think it still happens in this day and age. Number two, the receiver of the abuse just expects that her relationship with her great catch was supposed to be supportive. Number three, she didn't realize that this controlling abusive relationship was happening under her own nose. Ask yourself, to what extent in the following three ways is your client unaware of the control and the abuse in their relationship? Let me go back over that list of three again. Number one, she doesn't think that this type of abuse happens in this day and age. Number two, she just expects that her relationship with her great catch was supposed to be supportive, therefore it is. And number three, she doesn't realize that this controlling and abusive relationship has happened right under her own nose. Doesn't see the forest for the trees, so to speak. A more subtle form of killing the spirit than that of the can't you take a joke tactic is one of teasing. Here's how Shannon described the chipping away of self-esteem process. Shannon, age 31, said, "I feel like I've lost my energy and drive. I'm just not sure of myself anymore." She mentioned some of the things her husband Aaron said. "He teases me a lot. He teases me about the way I drive. I don't drive in the exact middle of the lane, but to the right of the lane. He teases me about the way I walk. He says I look like a duck with my toes pointed out. Sometimes he even quacks as I walk past him in the hall. I know my toes do turn out. It's just hard to concentrate on pointing them straight all the time, especially when I have a laundry basket full of clothes. Aaron even teases me about the way I make the bed in the morning. He says, 'There you go again with those messy corners. That would never pass a Marine Corps inspection.' I know he's just affectionately teasing me. Aaron probably thinks my stupid little ways are cute, but after a while it makes me feel stupid and inadequate. I'm not sure I can do anything right. Maybe I really am stupid and I can't do anything right. I hate myself sometimes." As you know, depression is self-hate turned inward. Shannon's spiraling self-hate and depression were facilitated by lack of support from her family. Shannon's family told her that Aaron's teasing was nothing to worry about and that she was being too sensitive. They would then reinforce the myth of what a great catch Aaron was by telling her how lucky she was to get anybody to marry her. As you can see, Shannon nor her family realized that this affectionate teasing wasn't affectionate at all. It was slowly chipping away at her self-esteem. After a few sessions together, Shannon and I realized that she was not really walking like a duck, but was walking on eggshells around Aaron in an attempt to avoid his teasing. As you are aware, a way to help your clients who deal with controlling and abusive relationships by their great catch is to make them aware that they are being abused. How would you proceed with Shannon? See if any of the following three forms of verbal abuse come to mind. Number one, verbal abuse. I will pause after reading each of these to give you a chance to think of and apply them to a client you are treating or have treated. Here's the list. Belittling, smirking, mimicking, insulting, and ignoring. The incident that brought Shannon into my office, as she described it, Aaron, in addition to teasing, repeatedly has started to use name-calling like stupid bitch again and again and again. Just yesterday when he left the apartment, he yelled, "I'm not going to stay here and take this, you stupid bitch," as if he were the injured party. Other times he would use a taunting tone in his voice, then just roll his eyes and walk away. I felt like I wanted to die. So for criteria number one, verbal abuse, ask yourself, are you currently treating a client whose significant other uses belittling, smirking, mimicking, insulting, or ignoring? Number two, in addition or perhaps instead of recognizable verbal abuse like we've just talked about, the great catch may use eloquent or jargon or academic or trendy words to sound superior. Here's what I mean. See if it sounds familiar with the client you're treating. I had a client whose significant other would yell things like, "Your profound ignorance is appalling. Your disgraceful neglect is not to be condoned." So think for a moment about this second form of abuse by using words that sound superior. Would it be appropriate to reframe a situation in your next session for your client regarding their significant other's use of superior language as a form of verbal abuse? Is this something perhaps you have overlooked and might bring to the attention of your client if you feel appropriate? Number three, controlling behavior number three goes hand in hand with the superior language we've just talked about. Number three is treating the partner like he or she is a child. For example, repeating statements as if the partner would not understand or overly explaining simple tasks. For example, stating, "This is how you correctly place the jelly lid on the jelly jar. You turn it until it is tight like this." I feel the main problem here is validation of Shannon's feelings. Shannon dismissed these as small things that she should overlook because, after all, she was lucky to have snagged such a great catch like Aaron, who had a stable job. I found Shannon had to give herself permission to have negative feelings about her great catch Aaron. I used the following verbalization to facilitate the process of Shannon's expressing her negative feelings towards Aaron. I stated, "Compare the negative feelings that you have towards Aaron to going out in winter weather. You hold your breath, tighten your body with teeth clenched, shivering and chattering, and are barely breathing, trying to avoid contact with the cold. When you decide to relax your shoulders, jaw, eyebrows, knees loosen, the chill is no longer an enemy. The cold now feels energizing." This cold weather analogy helped Shannon to accept her feelings and to give herself permission to have them. The cold weather was her negative feelings towards Aaron, but when she relaxed and accepted them, she could validate them. Shannon began to feel that she didn't have to have a doormat facade to keep Aaron. In the next track, I will discuss what I say when a client asks, "How could I have known my great catch would be so cruel? Are there any warning signs or patterns that I missed?" Question number four. What is one application of the cold weather analogy?